With infinite complacence, people went to and fro over the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
In late September, the world's most expensive energy project to develop the world's largest natural gas and oil field skidded over an embankment. Suddenly, environmental permits were denied. At the highest levels, London, Washington, and Wall Street are protesting. Like a new revolution, Putin's Russia launches an energy battle, ticking away below the radar of the latest scandal headlines in the West. Your own heat and electricity could be affected for years to come in the struggle over the world's last remaining fossil fuels. Now there is a new natural gas fight. Get used to it.
Oh, some of the oil companies are already saying, including Shell, that they are switching to natural gas. That's where they see the future. And then the next big question is there so much natural gas out there? That's another huge question. And there's an increasing sense among some analysts that the great reserves, particularly in Russia, just may not be there. So not only are we not getting away from a fossil fuel by going to natural gas, we may be switching to one which itself is soon going to peak, or certainly not rise very much beyond where we've got now, and is once again in countries which are either playing very interesting games like Russia with the US, or else they're in countries which just flat don't like the U.S.
You're listening to Karen Black
and Christopher Padden
on the new Lifeboat Show here on KMUN, KTCB Community Radio, and we're talking with author Julian Darley.
The new energy hope is on the other side of the world, on a remote subarctic island off the east coast of Russia. There, Shell Oil, along with two Japanese partners, is developing Sakhalin 2 oil and gas project. The $20 billion complex of offshore oil platforms, pipelines, and loading ports is 80% complete. It was expected to reach full production in 2008. All those gas delivery contracts to various companies, including Japan's largest electricity providers, have been signed. Now the consortium can't get the necessary environmental approvals to operate. Russia is reneging on the sweetheart deal given to the multinationals, including Exxon, back in 1994 by the prostrate post-communist government of Boris Yeltsin. Enriched and emboldened by their new oil wealth, Putin's government wants to take back a share in the fossil fuel bonanza waiting below the sea off Sakhalin Island. Both the White House and Downing Street have sent their complaints. Some are suggesting that all new investment with the Russians is now in question. A deal is a deal, no matter how stinking, unjust, and environmentally irresponsible it may be. The European Union has said all future investments in Russia are in doubt, and this act is, quote, providing uncertainties for the world's future energy supply. Most of you heat and perhaps cook with natural gas. Unseen, it also powers most of the new electricity generation in both Europe and North America. But American and Canadian supplies of natural gas have been in decline for over a decade. Canada, the former gas giant, is expected to run down by 2014, just 4 years after the Olympics in Vancouver. So everyone, from Beijing to Ottawa, is scrambling to lock in supplies from across the world, from Qatar, from Indonesia, and especially from Russia. The European economy could not survive a year without natural gas from Russia. That's why this fight over resources on a remote island goes right into your home. According to the BBC, quote, Sakhalin 2 is estimated to have total reserves of about 1 billion barrels of oil and 500 billion cubic meters of gas, making it one of the world's largest combined oil and gas projects, end quote. Putin's bureaucrats are withholding the permits, citing ecological concerns. Big environment groups like Friends of Earth, the World Wildlife Fund, and Greenpeace agree that Shell's mega project threatens the last Pacific Western gray whales on Earth, and 1,000 pristine salmon streams, and a wilderness wildlife haven. Without the lure of natural gas and oil, our mega corporations would never visit Sakhalin, it would be left to the 40,000 islanders, who incidentally get none of the benefits. They live in classic Russian poverty and won't get even a bit of the gas to heat their concrete huts in the winter time. It's all for us, none for them. It's called liquid natural gas, or LNG. Of course, this gas piped to the surface has to be frozen at hundreds of degrees below zero to compress and transport it to the West in super tankers. It's the coming thing, and new LNG unloading terminals are being proposed east, west, north, and south. Shell Oil, the world's third largest company by revenues, over $300 billion a year in sales, discovered a huge natural gas field in Sakhalin, an island hundreds of miles long, just north of Japan. In fact, Japan and Russia have been disputing ownership of Sakhalin for almost 100 years. Now that it's loaded with energy, the state with the biggest nuclear arsenal wins ownership. Japan desperately needs that energy, since it has none of its own. So two of its largest super conglomerates, Mitsubishi and Mitsui, joined Shell as minority owners to strike a deal with the drunken Boris Yeltsin. That was in 1994, when the Russian treasury was too broke to pay its teachers and miners. And what a deal it was. The Russian state would get nothing until the multinational oil companies recouped all their development money, and the lease for the site was a princely $50,000 a year. Exxon also got into the action, opening an oil drilling platform at the south end of the island. Leave your car and your heated room behind. Let's travel to one of those faraway places where it all comes from. Except for a small port on the southern tip, Sakhalin is surrounded by ice for 6 months a year. Shell needed a way to pump out its product year-round, and their giant gas field was about 500 miles further north. So, they're building an underground pipeline to run the full 500 miles to the open port, the whole length of the island. And they need another pipeline system under the sea to get their oil and gas to the island terminal. The main drilling platform, one of those giant city-like structures that appear in TV documentaries, and its system of feeder pipelines, are located outside a bay that is inhabited by other sentient mammals. These are the elusive Pacific Western gray whales. The unique Pacific grays, related to those that calve off Baja and Mexico, were presumed extinct, hunted to death for their oil. But it turned out they found a remote island where they could breed unseen for over 100 years until they were rediscovered in 1977. That is the bay at Sakhalin Island. They are magnificent, intelligent ocean creatures. There are about 100 of them left.
From a vantage point above the sea, the World Wildlife Fund have been watching the whales and worrying about their survival. They wanted Sakhalin Energy to delay construction until more research could be done.
If one extra female dies each year over the next 3 years due to the construction, then that could mean the end of the whole population.
Now their breeding ground is the site of monster platforms, tankers and construction ships, oil and gas leaks and industrial chemicals.
And oil spills and discharge of toxic wastes and the dredging of sea bottom bring a lot of impact on the whales and their feeding ground and their food.
And that's before the world's biggest gas operation even starts pumping. The biggest worry, an oil spill under the ice. Ice surrounds the island half the year, yet these platforms are drawing both oil and gas from deep on the ocean bottom.
Since the oil extraction started in 1999, near the whale feeding grounds, Russian and American scientists have encountered skinny whales, the name they give to severely malnourished animals. In some years, almost half of the whales they observed were skinny. To prevent further threats to this already endangered species, environmentalists suggest a number of alterations.
The company must change the route of undersea pipelines. It's extremely important to move pipelines much more south from feeding ground.
The consortium plans to construct yet another offshore platform in Pilton Bay. Dmitry Lisitsin worries about its proposed location.
This platform is going to be very close with Pacific gray whales habitat. And the company have to move this platform at least 12 nautical miles far from shore.
Now let's travel to Sakhalin Island itself. At the edge of the Russian Empire, the island was closed to all foreign visitors. it was the site of a secretive military base. The 40,000 islanders were the victims of splendid neglect by the Soviets, and this continued under the broken post-communist state. Most lived by subsistence fishing from the riches of the sea. Then a seeming miracle happened. Vast riches were discovered, and Western multinationals promised to inject tens of billions into the Sakhalin project. Yet today, most islanders continue to live in poverty, sidelined in the scramble for energy, power, and wealth. They won't even get a drop of gas to heat their homes in this subarctic climate.
What about giving Corsica some gas?
Our role is to develop the oil and gas fields. The decision about whether the gas is taken in Russia and where it goes to is something that we have to talk to the Russian authorities about. It's not entirely our decision. We're not a gas distributor. We are going to export the oil, and we're going to sell the gas as LNG.
The profits all go to Moscow, Shell Oil, Mitsubishi, and Mitsui. The gas and the oil come to the comfortable homes and power plants of the West, and about 5,000 foreign workers have showed up to collect the paychecks.
Big energy means big corporations, and big corporations see to it that very little of the money ever reaches the community. The money comes in to the corporation, and it's sucked up to the top of the corporation, where it goes into the global financial markets, into the foreign exchanges, and as little as possible ever reaches the community. This is a standard technique, and it will be the same with LNG. Unless a miracle will suddenly happen, and I think there's zero likelihood of that, you will see that LNG is the same thing as every other kind of big energy, big corporate activity, the minimum possible labor, the minimum amounts of money remaining in the community. Meanwhile, the trick is always you internalize benefit and you externalize the drawbacks and the risks and the costs onto the public, onto the locale, onto the community. And a classic, for instance, if there's any problems, you dump it and leave, leaving the community with all the horrible problems to clean up.
Worse, the islanders' food supply and fish economy is endangered. Not only is a tanker spill inevitable, but the giant pipeline project running down the island is a recipe for lasting disaster. As a big scar is cut through the pristine landscape, it must cross more than 1,000 salmon-bearing streams. The silt of construction threatens every one of them.
It will be a big impact on salmon because salmon avoids dirty waters, muddied waters. Salmon needs the crystal clear waters to spawn.
The salmon fishery provides one-third of all the income for the islanders. And we know that these pipelines, just like the ones in Alaska, always develop leaks, large and small. The pipeline crosses 26 geological fault lines in an area famous for its seismic activity.
Located on the boundary of the Eurasian and North American plates, Sakhalin is prone to earthquakes of high magnitude. American seismologist Richard Feinberg says that the pipeline is planned to cross highly active areas.
There are 22 fault crossings on the pipeline route, which is quite a lot, 22 active fault lines.
Feinberg's findings suggest that burying the pipelines in these seismic areas could lead to a disaster.
Earthquakes and tremors are also inevitable, threatening undetected leaks or even floods of oil and gas underground and in the waters. The Russian government is quite right to withhold environmental approval in such a situation. A lot of changes have to be made, but the project is wrong and unsustainable in the first place. Remember, none of this would be happening if you and I learned how to use alternative energy and conserve, or if our economy could operate without raping foreign lands and species. Cynics speculate the environmental permits are just chess pieces in a geopolitical game to rewrite ownership of Russian natural resources. Through moves like jailing the head of Yuko Oil, Putin is reasserting public ownership of the country's fossil fuel wealth. And he's not afraid to anger the largest multinationals in the world, because hardly anyone can operate now or in the future without Russian natural gas. This is so important. Natural gas deals are made by heads of state. Last summer, Canada's Prime Minister Stephen Harper's priority on meeting Putin for the first time was to seal a deal for $1 billion worth of gas for Canada. When German Chancellor Angela Merkel went calling, she was glad to come back with another gas contract, gas from the Stockman field, originally intended for the US market. It's a free-for-all of desperate energy buying. Meanwhile, Bush's regime seems intent on recreating aspects of the Cold War. They have sanctioned the Russian state arms company, Rosoboron Export, and other big Russian companies for selling arms and reactors to Iran. That's when the American gas contracts disappeared to the Germans. It's hardball with home heating and brinksmanship with fuel for electricity plants. The Russians have also denied permits to the American giant ExxonMobil, who wanted to expand their Sakhalin 1 project on the island. And they have protested Shell's new claims that Sakhalin 2 cost $20 billion to develop, double the original estimate. Why should they care? Because Shell apparently promised the Russian state gas company, Gazprom, a 25% buy-in in exchange for rights in other Arctic gas and oil fields. Now the Russians have to pony up twice as much resources just to get back in at Sakhalin. No wonder they're upset. Meanwhile, environmentalists are trying to shut bank doors against further financing of Shell's Sakhalin monster project. The Shell consortium, called Sakhalin Energy, applied for a $300 million loan from the European Bank for Reconstruction and Development, the EBRD. That institution was set up in 1991 with taxpayers' money to help rebuild the former Soviet republics after the fall. Now Shell, with tens of billions of profits lately, want the taxpayers to fund their environmentally damaging project at Sakhalin. Groups like Friends of Earth are calling foul and saying no. You can see a good video about all this and see the island's beauty and sadness for yourself in a video called Sakhalin's Black Tears. It's from the CEE Bankwatch Network, released January 2006. Go to Google Video and search for Sakhalin, spelled S-A-K-H-A-L-I-N. It's 17 minutes long, and you will feel you have been there. Hopefully, viewers will also see a million dark figures lurking in the background of every frame of this story. Ourselves. Because it's the same all over the world. Wherever oil and gas industry lands, the maximum amount of energy and profits go out, the bare minimum stays in the community. I mean, that's capitalism, folks, and the pollution lingers long after the party is over. In Nigeria, the Ogoni tribe living among the wells, pipelines, and pollution were kept impoverished. The greatest Ogoni spokesman and environmental protester was murdered by the police to stop criticism of the Shell project there. In Saudi Arabia, the Shiites who live in the oil fields watch the wealth pumped out to the Sunni royal family, often Riyadh. The people of Venezuela may finally get a piece of the pie, despite CIA attempts to install oil executives into the government instead of the popular Hugo Chavez. Natural gas was pumped out of Bolivia for years in the midst of abject poverty for the people. It's energy colonization. It's dangerous and destabilizing. We can expect terrorism and wars to come.
The natural gas itself is going to come from faraway places, often in Africa and in the Middle East and other places which may well not be friendly towards the US. And that is going to cause them problems because once you hook yourself into natural gas, it's a very long-term thing, often requiring 20 to 30-year contracts. You will then find you're then dependent on these other countries, and that will invite military up to and including military occupation, if not other forms of coercion, trade coercion, and so forth. So this is one of the reasons it has very nasty geopolitical consequences and doesn't do anything to reduce your demand on fossil fuels either.
And it all feeds the coming climate chaos. These are our energy crimes. We take what we need and claim we don't know what oil addiction costs people and the environment.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'll give you every detail as long as I can talk and as long as I can see this.
This report is from Radio EcoShock, the net's only all-environment radio station at www.ecoshock.org, ECO, shock like an electric shock, .org. Tune in, free.